You are now listening to Cinema Crespediso.
Well, once more, we survived the threat of war and found a fragile peace. I thought I could give you all the gift of the freedom from war, but I was wrong. It's not mine to give. We're still a young planet. There are galaxies out there, other civilizations for us to meet, to learn from. What a brilliant future we could have. And there will be peace. There will be peace when the people of the world want it so badly that their governments will have no choice but to give it to them. I just wish you could all see the Earth the way that I see it. Because when you really look at it, it's just one world.
Think you'll find us?
Never! We'll lay low for a while. A couple of years. I'll come up with a new plan.
Whoa, good thing I bought my drums.
Hey! Morning, Father. This young man's been under a bad influence. Do you think you can help him?
Every boy can be helped, Superman.
I think you're right. Good luck, son.
Come with me, my friend.
You wouldn't happen to have a drum set, would you?
Hey! Mozart's back! Dwayne, Mozart's back!
You see him, Bubba?
Shut up!
All right, Marshal, take him away.
Thank you kindly, Superman. Come on, Luthor.
Just one thing. How did you beat him?
High school physics, Luthor. While I was recuperating, I had time to figure out that if you're a foul creature was born from the sun, that had to be a source of energy.
Is the world going to be vaporized?
No, Luthor. It's as it always was, on the brink, with good fighting evil. See you in 20.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits?
Your $5 ass down before I make change.
Hello? Hello? Anybody home? Hey, think with fly. Think.
You dirt-eating piece of slime. You skunk-sucking pig. You son of a motherless goat.
Wait, let me explain something to you. I am not Mr. Lebowski. You're Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude.
You're killing me, Smalls.
That guy in a little coat.
You stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder.
Welcome to Cinema Crespediso.
All right, here we go. Welcome to episode 181 of Cinema Crespediso. How's it going, guys? I am your host, Christopher Crespo. It is me again. I'm here, still here. Not going anywhere. Not anytime soon. Although, you never know.
But say that's a shame. You should really get out more often, Chris.
Oh, that's true. I should. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's so hot out there. And,
I mean, it is. I get that.
And the sun, it's all like... And I'm all like...
I know, and there are insects outside.
Ooh, and snakes, and there's a red falcon that hangs out outside the studio that I'm afraid one day I'm not going to be looking, it's going to fly down and pluck my eyes.
You should just lock yourself in the studio for the rest of your life.
That's a good idea. Blue Apron, Uber takes me places. Blue Apron, yeah, Amazon. What's the Amazon food one?
Amazon Pantry.
I just need these things to bring food to me.
Exactly. You can just stay right there in your seat.
Start illegally downloading movies. How am I going to see my movies, man?
You can.
See my movies.
You just can't see them in theaters. Or I could like webcast them.
You go to a movie and Periscope the movie for me and I can watch it. Uh-huh. Why haven't we been doing that already? I don't understand why we're buying two tickets now. All right, we're going to have to work that out. I'm going to cut that part of the show out. We can talk about that for real later. That's my co-host, Drew Cogburn, with the ideas. How you doing, Drew?
I'm doing, man.
Awesome.
I got the ideas.
You do got the ideas. That's why you're here. That's why you're Dr. Drew.
I'm the idea, man.
You got the prescriptions for what we need. Prescriptions? Prescriptions.
Yes. Oh. Multiple prescriptions.
Multiple prescriptions.
Yeah, you're going to need more than one.
Oh, snap. With us, returning guest coming back. She was here in episode 147. We had a great time then. I'm sure we're going to have a great time now. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the one and only Jen Vargas is here.
Hello, everyone.
How you doing?
Doing okay.
Thanks for coming on again. We appreciate it.
Of course. I always love stopping by.
And 147, that was the math. What are the numbers there, buddy? Over 30 episodes ago.
Yes.
And for a month. Wow. Again, I feel like I need to have people back on more often. We only do so many episodes. There's so many people I want to have on, you know?
Right. But I appreciate that. That's very flattering.
Yeah, and we got great feedback from the last time you were here.
Oh.
Yes, people enjoyed it very much.
Thank you, everyone. Yeah,
exactly. So that's why you are back here, and we're going to have a good time today, as always. And now you get to hear the new Netflix Instant Pick of the Week theme song. Just debuted it last week, and I'll play it right now for everyone. And then we'll start the show with the Netflix pick. Here we go. We got what you see. Movies on fleek. Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. And you can check out all the past Netflix picks of the week at chriscrespo.com. What was last week? Last week was, Drew, what was last week? The Fury.
Yes.
Brian De Palma's The Fury. Correct. From 1978. Mm-hmm. Before that was something else awesome. That's the way it works. Jen, go ahead and let everyone know, what is this week's Netflix Instant Pick of the Week?
It's so ironic that I got this. The Sandlot.
Oh, hey. Right. I love that movie. Yeah. One of the very few family films in the Crespo Diesel Randomizer 9000. So I gotta say, that's like no kidding. It's good for the whole family. You know, the grandparents, the toddlers. You know,
but that's a great one though.
It's a fantastic one. It's one of my favorites. Baseball movie, sort of, because there's some baseball in there. I did grow up playing baseball as a kid.
I did too.
Yeah. So right there, you're like all the summers and getting together with friends. They got all that down, the excitement of getting the team together. And
Johnny Bench for life.
Yeah, the great Hambino. Come on, it's so good. Benny the Jet. I love The Sandlot. It's a fantastic, fun movie. Do you know they made like three of them too?
What? I had no idea.
I only saw the first one.
Yeah, they're direct-to-video sequels. Yeah. But they definitely made more than one, which is crazy. And not none of the same characters. I think the second one may have had like the same dog. Remember the dog, James Earl Jones' dog?
Yeah.
He played that old blind guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. James Earl Jones doesn't come back. Oh. But I think the dog does. I don't know. How does that work?
Excuse me?
Doesn't make any sense.
The dog was available.
Yeah. The dog had a better agent or a worse agent.
Depends on what you
It think. Depends on how the movie turned. I never saw The Sandlot 2, so I know. We're not here to promote The Sandlot 2. We're talking about The Sandlot, which is this week's Netflix Instant Pick. Thank you, Jenna. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Drew, you got the numbers over there?
Oh, do I ever.
All right, where are we starting? Where are we starting the top five?
The top five this week, starting at number 15.
What? That's 10 more than five?
Yep. The Neon Demon had a weekend gross of $606,000.
Whoa, that's a lot of money. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
How many theaters?
783.
Okay, so I actually thought the movie was slightly more wide release. I thought it would be like 1,000 theaters. Mm-hmm. 700, that's still a decent amount of theaters for no one to go see it.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, where's the marketing been?
Right. What marketing? Right. The only reason I even knew about the movie is all of a sudden you were like, Nicholas Winding Refn's got a new movie.
I showed you the trailer online.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
I saw a couple things on Twitter.
On Twitter, exactly. No, no TV, no trailers. How do they expect people to see these movies if they don't market them?
Well, here's the thing, Chris.
What's the thing?
The only movie that Nicholas Winding Refn has ever made that has been quote-unquote marketable was Drive.
Yeah.
They tried marketing Only God Forgives, but it was sort of fucking weird movie.
It's a very weird movie. So it got a much smaller release. Drive got a big release. That was a surprise hit.
Yeah,
really. Because it's still a Nicholas Winding Refn movie.
Oh, definitely. But it's the most accessible one, though.
I think it's because he didn't write it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, another guy, Michael Hosseini, wrote it.
Man, maybe that's how he could make money. He should direct what other people write.
I think maybe, yeah.
Because, I mean...
Because his last... Only God Forgives and Neon Demon, he wrote them both.
Not gonna lie. Love his movies.
Mm-hmm.
He's a weird guy. He does some weird stuff with film.
He has his taste.
They're very... completely, pretty much inaccessible movies, for the most part.
Mainstream-wise?
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't make movies for...
No tent poles there.
No. Imagine him making, like...
No.
Ant-Man?
No. I can't imagine him making anything but the movies that he makes.
And he's had meetings, too, with a few studios over. I guess a lot of directors just take meetings just to see
what happens.
What's going on. Yeah. Maybe they might have a weird fit. So he's taken some meetings to possibly do some, like, really mainstream stuff, but obviously... Never done that, and said he made this very weird...
Let's do Nicholas Winding Refn's
sort of horror movie.
Wolverine : Weapon X.
Right? Right?
The violence will be fine. Everything can be all weird and pretty and strange.
It'll be too weird, though. Like Wolverine will be at a nightclub, and like...
Oh, my God.
It'll be crazy. Electronic music. And the lights flashing all red, blue, red, blue. Like, it's like, what's going on? Wait, did he eat Molly? What's Wolverine? I don't understand. I thought it was supposed to... Anyway. Because we saw the Neon Demon, it's got a lot of that, right? And
yes.
I was reading an interview he did where they were talking about the process of making the movie. And it's a type of movie where he had a story, and he knew what he wanted to do with the characters. And then by day three, they're like, oh, we're doing a different ending. We're changing the ending completely.
And then
a week into it, they're like, oh, you know what? We need to reshoot the opening, because now what we have in the can, the opening doesn't fit. So because he's also the type of guy that usually shoots in sequential order, which most people don't do.
No.
It's not the most economic way to do things.
Nope.
Somehow he makes it work. It's only a $7 million budget.
No.
His movies also, I don't think he doesn't have a reputation for, he's not like a Doug Liman, where he's always over budget or over schedule. You know, he seems to have a good reputation for making what he says on the budget that he says he can. So even on a $7 million budget, though, less than $1 million, but there's no life. How do you market? I feel like, though, a movie like this, you could market it as like a horror film. There'll be a lot of disappointed people.
Yes, you
could. It'll get terrible word of mouth.
Uh-huh. I mean, if you tried to market it to, like, the teen girl crowd...
You market the teen girls, they'll show up and be weirded out.
Exactly. They will show up, and then they will never see a Nicholas Winding Refn movie again.
You can try marketing it as a hardcore horror film, and the horror stuff doesn't kick in until like 20 minutes.
No,
real. It's a lot of like malaise and dread in the film.
Yes.
Like, you know, tonally, there's a lot of fear and loathing going on. General fear and loathing. But the actual horror stuff doesn't kick into like way, way later. And it's sparse. So actual horror fans, they would be missold.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is, I think if you pick one of those routes, you could get an opening weekend of $5 million.
Yeah, probably.
Right?
No.
But then how much would he have to put into that? Would it cost you $10 million in marketing to get that $5 million? Where does it work, you know? Obviously, some number crunchers tried to figure it out. Like, you know what? It's easier for us to not spend money and just make pennies and move on from this.
Or reverse market it to something completely different. The word of mouth, the terrible word of mouth,
will
cause people to have that sort of train wreck.
And they'll be like, I'm out of there. I'm not going to go see that. That's how it has, like, what was the movie that just had? X-Men Apocalypse. Not too good word of mouth, I think it was that one. Had over 70%. No, Warcraft. Warcraft had an over 70% drop from the first weekend to the second weekend. First weekend, it made $24 million. Second weekend, it made $6
million. Well, because everybody went and saw first weekend.
Yeah,
they were like, you know what? If we're going to see this, we're going to get it done with.
Got it done with. And then they went and told their friends.
They're like, don't bother.
They're like,
I'll wait for Netflix.
That's what I told everyone. I was like, meh, you can wait. And everyone waited.
Because
that movie ain't making no money in America. But it's crushing overseas.
Oh, yeah.
So it doesn't matter. But Neon Demon. Okay, let's actually review this thing. As a Nicholas Winding Refn fan, Drew, did you like it?
Yes.
Yeah?
I thought it was better than Only God Forgives.
Okay.
I mean, it was saying a lot. It seems like he keeps... I mean, I've seen almost all of his movies now, I think.
Yes.
Some of them can... His violence is sparse, but brutal.
Right.
And this movie seemed to have a little bit more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And also a lot more of the, I guess, the mental weirdness as well.
The surrealness.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are parts where it gets like, I guess it's because it's from the character's perspective, and she's like falling down the rabbit hole of,
yeah, I mean, that,
of this fictional seedy underbelly, I mean, modeling underbelly, yeah, where that, it's like everyone's, I mean, super evil in the modeling world.
That walk down the catwalk that she did was fucking insane.
Yeah, there's a scene in this movie, she's walking down the catwalk as the main event, and it stops being a catwalk, and it turns into, I thought, like the 2001 A Space Odyssey. Yeah. The black slab sequence where it's like she's being programmed by a higher being and evolving to the next level.
It starts blue, she walks down, things happen, everything goes red, and then she walks back.
Yeah, everything goes red, and it's like the she's looking at a very specific design. Yeah. You can see it in her eyes, and it's like reflected in her eye, and then she's reflected in it in certain ways, and then it just gets really intense for a few minutes. Very surreal. Yeah. The Cliff Martinez soundtrack is very, very electronic and pulsing, and it's a, for many scenes like that, it's a pretty intense experience. Mm-hmm. I like the movie. It's too long.
Yes, agreed.
It's 2 hours. How long was it? 2 hours.
Oh.
Could have been an hour 40.
Easily.
Easily an hour 40. It could have been a tight hour 40 of creepiness. Instead, it's 2 hours where it's like, yeah, you're kind of meandering here and there. We could have cut some of these scenes shorter. We could have cut some of the scenes out. It's a type of movie where I kept expecting it to end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were three different scenes in a row where it was like,
oh, shit, here's the end.
Yeah, the shot was lingering.
And then no.
I was like, here we go. It's going to cut to black and say, directed by Nicholas Winding Refn. And then, oh, okay, no, another scene.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, it's geez. Like, oh, this is going to be it. This is it. This is the last scene.
One
more scene. It happened at least three times.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a good sign of a story when it feels like, you know, you don't know where to end it. But then when I read about how they quote, wrote the movie sort of on the fly, like they had a skeleton and then filled it in, it makes more sense. Yeah. I'm surprised that the movie works as well as it does. Because that is playing with fire when you're trying to make a movie that way. So there are also there's scenes where it's like it's dragging, and there are other scenes that are really well done and super tense.
Whoa.
And everything with Keanu Reeves is great. He plays a really creepy, seedy motel manager.
So
that's just like the worst.
So here's my question.
Very intimidating.
Here's my question. Was that him at the door? And then he went next door instead?
Oh, yeah, I think so. It's meant to be.
Was that him?
Yeah, it's meant to be him. I'm pretty sure.
Just wanted to make sure. Almost. That was a little ambiguous.
Yeah. There's some ambiguity in the movie, too, for sure, 100%. So that's the thing. That's why it's not that mainstream accessible.
Yeah.
So people got to be... Like, Drive is definitely the most accessible thing he's done, and since then it's been like...
I'll tell you what. I did not see Elle Fanning being in this movie.
Interesting choice for the lead. For
it worked. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, it worked.
Yeah.
I didn't think she was that kind of person.
Right. That she would do something kind of...
That she would do this fucking weird-ass movie.
But maybe that's why she does it, because she's trying to change her people's perception of her. She's transitioning into adulthood, and what do most, you know, young, famous women do when they're trying to make that change from teenage to adult?
Do something shocking.
Something weird. And something shocking. You want shocking, you got it.
They go that Miley Cyrus route. She did it in her own way, in a much more artistic...
Definitely.
I also feel like with this movie, as much as it is about modeling and sort of like the bad side of modeling in the fashion world, the movie itself is gorgeous and it's a lot of artifice, and on the superficial level, it's beautiful to look at.
Yes.
But it is also very vapid.
Just like the models.
Just like the models.
Okay.
At the end of the day, the movie's not saying much at all. It's a mood piece. It's very much like fashion. It's about the look and the design and the feel of it and the way it makes you feel in the moment. But when it's all said and done, it's like...
It didn't change anything.
It does, yeah. The world did not change.
Oh.
That's for sure. So, but I mean, just for people that like something interesting and unique and different, I say at least check it out. You may not like it, but at least see it.
Even if you're just a fan of eye candy.
Right.
Go watch this movie.
Yeah, the opening scenes alone have you like, they suck you right in with the way the camera moves and the imagery itself. It's pretty intense. It's good stuff. Jenna Malone's in it. She's great.
Yep.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I really like
Jenna Malone. She does some weird stuff.
Yeah. I was not at all going to see this film, but now I'm kind of curious.
Weird stuff.
Definitely, like if you are a fan of this guy's work, and you get a chance to see it in theaters, go see it. If you're not really a fan, but you do want to see something different, wait for the DVD. Check it out at home, you know, where you can feel comfortable fast-forwarding or stopping.
Just be prepared.
I have to walk away.
Depending on how squeamish you are, you might.
There's a couple.
Boy. There's some scenes where fucking shit gets real.
Yeah, there's at least one scene where I'm like, I don't know if this is really necessary.
Yeah.
kind of might even set back, like,
whatever. Oh, I mean, yeah, but man, that scene was great though.
Are we talking about the same scene?
So.
I don't think
maybe.
So. Was it great?
I don't know. The scene I'm thinking about was. No. That scene was not great.
I don't want to say what. I don't want to spoil that scene, what it is. That scene was very shocking.
That scene, yes, and unnerving.
Yeah.
And I was kind of wondering just how long that scene was going to go on for.
Yeah. How far it was going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now people are wondering what we're talking about.
And it went pretty far.
It went pretty far.
Requiem for a Dream thing.
Some scenes have that like dirtiness to it. Like you're looking at something that's underground
and wrong, and you know it's wrong.
Kind of like an Eyes Wide Shut kind of thing.
And these people are definitely probably depraved for doing it, but man, I kind of want to watch.
Yeah, and they're doing terrible things to like sustain all this. And it's interesting. It's a very interesting movie. Like I said, beautiful and vapid. It's
beautiful and vapid.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I say it's worth seeing. There are other people out there who are like, fuck this guy and fuck his movies. So it's art. His movies are like the definition of art.
No, exactly.
So.
They're definitely...
Yeah. The definition of the question, of his, what is art? Yeah. The whole debate, those are his movies.
If you're a fan of his work, then there's a reason you're a fan. And if you're not a fan, we get it.
Yeah.
I understand.
There's a reason. It's his particular aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that was number 15. All right, let's get through, because we got other movies to talk about, and sorry, the show's going. Let's go.
Number 5, Free State of Jones.
Oh, already number 5. Good.
Made $7.7 million, same as total.
Now, I wanted to see this movie because it is about the, quote, truth of Reconstruction in America and how after the Civil War and the Emancipation Proclamation, a lot of Southern states and Southern governments did a lot to, like, legally find ways to drive black people back onto the plantation and, you know, leading all the way up to Jim Crow. How it was just a cluster. It went really poorly. And the movie touches on that. I read an interview with the director, Gary Ross, who said while he was making Hunger Games, the very first Hunger Games, he was hoping making that movie would give him the clout to make Free State of Jones. And even then, it didn't get him all the way there. He still had to work pretty hard. This is a passion project for this guy. The guy who did Pleasantville back in the 90s, right? Yeah. This guy has an interesting filmography where his movies don't seem like they match. You know, he jumps a lot, which is good. And to varying levels of success. Did not see this movie. The word I've been reading, what I've been reading over and over, is that it is unfortunately boring. That it's just like a history lesson. Like maybe he got too into the facts of the time and trying to get across what he feels is the truth, like the revision history of the time period, and instead he forgot to like make the movie actually entertaining to watch.
Oh, right.
You know, so
he forgot it was a movie.
Yeah. Oh. So it sounds like it's gonna be the type of a Redbox type of thing. Because I'm interested in the subject matter. I like Matthew McConaughey. But there are too many movies. That would have been the fourth movie this weekend if I went and seen that earlier today. And it would have been like earlier this afternoon.
And it's the worst reviewed of them all.
Is it really? What's it on Rotten Tomatoes?
40%.
Ooh.
40%? That's lower than the other movie we saw?
Neon Demon was 48. Independence Day, 33.
There we go. That's what I'm talking
about.
You'll find out soon enough.
So we didn't see Free State of Jones. Not too well-reviewed. Number 5 movie of the weekend. Sorry, McConaughey. What's number 4?
Number 4, The Shallows. Weekend gross, $16.7 million. Sims total.
The S-Hallows. $16
million? Yeah, 16.7.
What, does it have a budget?
17.
Oh, okay. Figure another... They say doubled the budget for marketing, so figure another 15 to 30 million for the... Because this one, there actually were trailers and stuff. Yeah. This is marketed pretty well. I think it's pretty good. I think it's going to make some decent money. What's going to help it make money is the fact that, at least I think so, it's a good movie.
Yeah, I was surprised at how... I mean, there were a couple hokey parts.
Of course, yes. She's like... There's one part where she's like, she talks to the shark. She's like... Yeah. She's like... I want to put you to like fuck off or something to the shark, like the one F bomb of the PG-13 movie. But no, she's like, no, she goes at one point to like, a couple of little
exactly. Sure. But yeah, I mean, all in all, it was a fucking it was a tense movie. Yeah, it was. Really? I mean, I mean, obviously, the shark was nowhere near as big as Jaws.
I think it might have been around maybe a little smaller.
But the stakes.
It's hard to tell. It's definitely a CG shark.
The tension and the stakes were just as high.
Yeah,
the entire movie in about 200 yards.
That's true.
That was the entire movie. 200 yards.
Almost, the whole movie takes place in that lagoon.
That was the freakiest 200 yards in 2 days.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. The movie does take place over like 24 hours, and it's just in like one location. And it's mostly Blake Lively. Yeah. There are a handful of other characters.
But and most of them die.
They disappear quickly or then die later. So it's mostly just her and a seagull. Like the dopest seagull in the movie ever. The seagull's awesome. And yeah, and a shark. It's just her and the shark. And the shark is just circling her.
Yeah.
And she's just stuck on a rock because she was there surfing.
Now, I mean,
on a secretive beach that she doesn't even know the name of, so she can't even... When she has a chance to get try to get help, she's like, I'm on a beach. I don't know what it's called. That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I was surprised. I didn't think she had the chops to carry a movie by herself.
Blake Lively?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's been okay in other movies, but I never thought much of her. But she
exactly.
She was good in this.
Yeah.
I totally thought she carried it fine. I liked... some of the photography, speaking of like, you know, going like the gorgeous photography that we're talking about, Neon Demon. This one
same
had
thing,
some awesome,
yeah.
great looking surfing photography.
Yeah.
Like underwater stuff that looked great.
It have to.
Well, and the
right
thing was,
got to focus on that stuff.
And the,
right?
and the way they set it up too, every time the camera goes underwater, you get even more tense.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, because you know it's lurking.
Because the way they set up the movie right from the beginning.
Yeah. You know.
Every time that camera dips underneath water, you're like, oh shit.
And also, if we're seeing the movie, most likely we know what the movie is going into. So already we know. We see the body of water.
Tense.
Shark. We're like, there's a shark out there somewhere. And we're just waiting for that first time to appear. And actually, the first time the shark really does make an appearance, it's that shot where she's like trying to surf back to the beach for the last time. Just the end of the day, she's surfing like she's going to get out of the water.
Yeah.
And the wave
comes, and then all of a sudden. There's a shark in the middle of the wave.
It's like you see the silhouette of
it's
the shark
fucking shadow,
yeah, like appearing as it's coming at her in slow motion, and it's a gorgeous, ominous whoa. Like hair raising shot. I was like, whoa, this is really. That's I think the moment that like sold me for sure on the movie. And then the rest of the time, I was like, this is intense stuff. How's she gonna do it? How's she gonna get out? You know. So I say it's worth it. I say it's worth seeing in theaters.
Definitely.
For sure.
I mean, some pretty gnarly body horror.
Yeah, because, and you can see some of it in the trailer. Like, she gets bit at one point, right on the thigh, and you see that in all the marketing. And there's a great shot there, too, where she's, like, underwater, and she's being bitten in slow motion, and the water turns red around
slowly.
Her. Very slowly.
Starts to turn red, and then when she comes up for air, the shot is above, and you just see red.
Yeah.
There's no blue water anymore.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was like, whoa! And is that movie PG-13?
I think so.
I think it is. Because I felt like when she said the one F-bomb so late in the movie, you know, so like, like out of place, I was like, oh, wait, is this PG-13?
Yeah, it is.
It felt so...
It is PG-13.
Okay, yeah.
They're like, okay, you can have that one.
Yes, exactly. We always let you have one. As long as it's not sexual, you're good to go. And she was just telling that shark to fuck off. Yeah, so it was a gorgeous movie. The stakes were very high, and you know, and then it all... It proceeds like naturally, you know, like it makes sense logically. It just the whole thing just works. I think it's very well, and yeah, she gets messed up her body.
Oh yeah,
terrifying. As much as you can in a PG-13 movie.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. So I recommend it.
Yeah, definitely, 100%.
And that so then it would be the highest rated film on Rotten Tomatoes this weekend.
Yes, for the weekend.
What's it sitting at?
74%.
Oh wow, that's much more. Yeah, very. Yeah, sure. Okay, what's the average rating on there? Like a 7? 6.5 out of 10, 7 out of 10? I would go like 7 out of 10.
6.3.
I think that's a little low. Because I think it's a little better than 6.3. All right, cool. Groovy.
Yeah, man.
I like it. That was number
4.
4. Only in number 4?
Number 3, Central Intelligence, 18.3 million, total of 69.
69 million so far? Not bad. I saw this last week, reviewed it last week. Dwayne Johnson and Kevin Hart are fantastic together. They should do more things together.
Huh.
But with a different creative team than the people behind Central Intelligence, because they wasted them. That movie could have been better. Could have been better. But I reviewed it last week. Also wrote about it at chriscrespo.com.
Coming in at number 2.
Number 2.
Independence Day: Resurgence. Weekend gross 41.6 million, same as the total.
All right, we're going to do a quick spoiler-free review now. Drew, I want to do a spoiler episode in the next day or two so we can really sink our teeth into this one like The Shallows, you know. Drag it underwater and shake it around and then throw it up in the air.
Sounds good.
Okay. But for now we'll just give it a couple nudges. Independence Day: Resurgence.
Correct.
The aliens decide to come back to Earth 20 years to the day.
Yes.
they had a calendar set.
They're timely.
Yeah, they set that appointment. They're like, we'll be back in 2 decades.
Well, I mean,
we know it's 4th of July. We know the significance of Independence Day in America.
In all reality, the way that they got there, they could have come whenever they fucking chose.
Whatever. It wasn't like they were traveling the whole time. They had like
wormhole. It's like, oh, and I'm here now.
Yeah, wormhole, Blackgate, Stargate technology. Yeah, sons of bitches. Because they knew. The aliens knew what 4th of July in America meant.
Correct.
And they didn't care that they were taking over the whole world. Nope. America didn't represent the whole world.
Correct.
They were like, it's 4th of July. We're here, motherfuckers.
Yep.
So it's the whole bigger is better philosophy.
And it failed.
Well, they got the first part right. Things are bigger.
Yes, things were bigger.
The spaceship was bigger.
The alien was bigger. The
alien was bigger.
Yeah.
Can I say something that confused me with the trailer?
Yes, sure. Please.
Brent Spiner was in the trailer.
Who?
Wasn't Brent Spiner in the trailer?
I don't know who that is.
He was Dr. Oaken.
I don't know who that is.
He was a scientist that was like the hippie long hair.
Yes! Oh,
yes. Yes, he's back.
Did he die?
He
apparently coma for 20 years.
Apparently in a coma for 20 years.
Oh,
I don't remember what happened to him in the first movie because I haven't seen that one in a while.
Oh, jeez.
I remember he got beat up by the aliens. He was one of the first ones because he was the one that they
communicated with them.
Correct.
Right.
But then we never see what happened to him after. Like, he gets sucked into the...
He's one of those... Like a right. Yeah, exactly. And then
gasp. Yeah. And then we assume
he died. It's all
over. Okay.
Yeah. Apparently, he was in a coma the whole time.
Yeah.
All right.
And then he wakes up when the aliens are getting ready to come back. And he's like very much involved in trying to like fight back. He's in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's a hell of a coma. It's good that he got a bigger part, though.
Yeah, he did get a bigger part out of it. Because he comes back, Jeff Goldblum comes back, and Judd Hirsch comes back. And Bill Pullman comes back.
Of course. Well, he's got to give the speech, so...
He has two speeches in this movie. Mm-hmm. And neither of them are as good as the speech from 20 years ago.
He can't beat that, though.
The guy that they got to play Will Smith's son stinks. He's as uncharismatic and boring as it gets.
He is as uncharismatic as Will Smith is charismatic.
Yes. Yes. There you go. Mm-hmm. It's a complete...
Yeah.
Yeah. Proportionate.
Yes.
Anti-proportionate.
Correct.
Is that a thing?
Sure.
It is now.
Liam Hemsworth is a character who he has three storylines around him, and they're all boring and pointless. He has storyline A, which is he has like a little buddy.
Chris.
Who is like, we're best friends.
Chris.
What?
The entire movie was boring and pointless.
I know. But I want to get specifically to this one guy, right? Storyline A is like his little buddy, and he's like,
boring and pointless.
Right. He's like, you're the only family they have. Yeah. He's like, you're the only family they
Nobody cares.
And then nothing happens with that. Storyline B, he's the boyfriend of the daughter of Bill Pullman's character, played by Micah Monroe. And they're like, I miss you. You're on the moon. I'm stationed on the moon.
Nothing
you're
happens. Nobody cares.
They're talking about how much they miss each other, right?
Yeah. And then when they got together, they're like, let's immediately go apart.
Yes! As soon as they got to each other, they were like, a quick kiss on the cheek, and he was like, I gotta go. And she was like, I know. And then he left.
I love you. I know.
It was, oh my God. I was like, I thought they were... pointless. And then the third storyline is a storyline about how him and Will Smith's son... he almost got him killed in like a training mission or
something.
Nobody
cares. And nothing ever comes of that.
Yeah, and then he's like, oh, bro. Okay, I'm sorry. It's like, okay, cool. And then, what? Oh, yeah. The whole time all this is happening, aliens.
Yeah.
None of that matters. None of it connects to the aliens. The first Independence Day movie was written, so everything worked. Everything pointed to the same thing.
Yeah.
This one was just like a bunch of disparate shit that didn't make any sense.
Vivica A. Fox was in the movie for a whole 10 seconds?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Ceremoniously dumped. Unceremoniously dumped. In a wide shot. I was like, what is this? I was so confused. That movie is not good.
Was there a Welcome to Earth?
Kind of, I think.
But not, I can't remember.
Nowhere near as good as Will Smith punching the alien.
It didn't have any moments as memorable.
That was the gravitas.
Yes, exactly.
Because it didn't have Will Smith.
Yeah, that's true.
It's because Will Smith read the script.
Yeah, he was just like, no.
He's like, I'm not signing on to this stuff. Like, you want to pay me $100 million? No, then I'm not doing this.
I mean, like I was saying earlier, Chris, the best part of that movie was the painting of Will Smith that you saw for two frames.
Yeah, for his character.
Yeah, but it's like, oh, look, there's Will Smith. All right, and the movie.
And then another part of the kid, he was looking at some pictures of young Vivica A. Fox and Will Smith. I'm like, oh, a better movie. Mm-hmm. He's like remembering a better movie. He's like, I wish I was in that movie. But I'm in this movie. It stinks. It's not a good film. I don't think people should even like waste their time with it.
No, don't bother.
You know, if you really like Independence Day, rewatch that first one.
Seriously.
Because this one does nothing new, nothing interesting. It's It's a waste of Jeff Goldblum. Charlotte Gainsborough's in this movie. She shows up and literally does nothing. And she's in the movie the entire film. Yes. I'm like, why is Charlotte Gainsborough?
Nobody does
anything. I'm glad she's getting a paycheck. I'm sure she. People need to get paid. So it's cool to see her in a blockbuster.
Right.
But she's not doing nothing.
Nobody does anything in this movie.
Chris. Of all the movies, she's a very picky actress. Of all the movies for her to choose, why did she choose that one?
Cha-ching.
She must be friends with Roland Emmerich or something. And then the movie ends with, and this is how we're going to do the sequels.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Instead of having an ending...
It was a setup.
Yes. Mm. Set up for 1,000 more Independence Day movies.
And they're all going to be awful.
And the merch is going to outsell anything else.
Probably because the production design is still cool. Yeah. You know, it's still...
Aliens.
Roland Emmerich knows how to stage stuff. He's a professional director. I mean, it's never incompetent.
There was one
scene... It's just dumb.
There was one scene that was really awesome.
Which one?
When Hong Kong fell on London.
Oh, yeah, that was cool. the main destruction sequence.
Yes, when Hong Kong fell on London.
But it's also like we've seen this before. We've seen...
We've never seen another city rain down on another city.
No, but we've seen like cities literally picked up into the air to be chucked onto the ground. Yes. Avengers. We've seen cities destroyed from above and below. We've seen it done in slow motion.
It was fun watching it rain Hong Kong and London.
I guess so. It's like it just all felt been there, done that. Yeah. It's like the there's a big alien reveal, a giant alien running around, and it feels exactly like the Mudo. And Godzilla.
Yeah.
Exactly like them. The big aliens. Exactly like them. I was like, do you guys just rip off that design?
Yes.
Probably.
That's so weird.
A mixture of that and the small aliens.
Not a good movie. Don't see it. Don't do it.
Jim. Agreed.
Don't do it.
Jim. I had no intention.
Okay.
I love Jeff Goldblum and I'll do things for him.
I love Jeff Goldblum.
I can't.
Not I love him. Movie. I love Bill Pullman. I like Michael Monroe's in it. She's great. But
not in this movie.
No, it's a bummer. At least they got paid.
Coming in number one this week.
Number one.
Finding Dory.
Of course.
Weekend gross $73 million. Total of $286 million.
73?
Oh, yeah.
Whew. It made one, like 30 something last weekend, which set a record. An animation opening weekend record. Maybe highest opening all time at 130 something for Finding Dory.
Okay. That sounds fair.
I think so off the top of my head. I know it was huge. And then the fact that it. 70 is what? That's like a 40% drop from week to week?
45,
I think. That's that good word of mouth as opposed to what happened to Warcraft.
Yeah. Well, because Finding Dory is a good movie.
Finding Dory is a very good movie. I enjoy it quite a bit.
It's absurdly cute.
It's fun. It's you're seeing the old characters that you like from the first movie.
Some
new ones that are just as good. And they're like, oh, this is. It doesn't feel like a cash grab. It doesn't feel cynical.
Yeah.
It feels like they actually had a good story to tell. And we talked about it last week. We liked it. So, if you ever get a chance to see that one, of all the movies we talked about, that's the one to see right now.
That one,
yeah. Right. Finding Dory and the Neon Demon. That's a
double. And the Shallows. Go see the Shallows too.
Oh, Shallows is a good too.
Okay.
If you're into Killer Shark movies, the Killer Shark movie bar was set very low.
Not anymore.
That movie just raised it a little higher. Because outside of Jaws,
I mean, yeah.
Chomp.
Well, no, exactly.
Jaws sequels, Sharknado movies.
Exactly. So In all reality, it's Jaws, The Shallows, and then
Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah.
And then
everything else.
Into the pit with them. Uh-huh. And set them on fire.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, wow, that was... I never realized that. The Shallows is the second best shark movie ever made.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how Eli Roth does with his Meg movie. Mm. He's doing a Megalodon film.
Yeah.
So...
That could be fun.
A lot of potential for a giant prehistoric shark film.
I'm down.
So that was number one, Finding Dory. Correct. Of course it was. All right. New movies come out on DVD. Eye in the Sky, the drone warfare movie, which I remember Drew did not like.
It was so boring.
Drew was bored out of his mind. I thought it was okay. Drew was like, no. But Helen Mirren's in it. She's great. Aaron Paul's in it.
Yeah, I love her.
It's got a good cast. Yeah. Also, Alan Rickman's last live action performance. And he's good at it.
He was.
Yeah, he's like a guy who's in the English cabin, like deciding whether or not we're going to bomb this little girl.
Aww.
Kung Fu Panda 3 comes out. I didn't see that one. I like the first two, so I'll probably see the third one on DVD. Mm-hmm. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, the Tina Fey movie, also comes out on DVD. What's come out in theaters, Drew?
In theaters, we've got now. The Legend of Tarzan.
Does anyone else think that this looks just horrible?
It looks really passable. Like, it looks kind of bland. You know what it looks like? Mm-hmm. It looks like someone saw the Planet of the Apes movies and someone saw that they were making these Jungle Book movies and was like,
Fuck it. Monkeys in a forest. Let's do Tarzan.
Let's do it.
Monkeys and a man in a forest.
Let's fucking do it. Let's come on, guys.
Aren't they more apes? They're apes.
Whatever.
Just don't be specious, Drew. That's all
I'm saying. We're just monkeys, too. So, it's like I said, monkeys in a forest.
Are we? No, we're apes.
We're all just animals.
Okay, fine. Yeah, blanket statement, animals. We're all just organisms, man. We're just a bundle of molecules and atoms, bro.
Correct.
Totally.
Right, okay. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I think... you know who directed? David Yates.
Correct.
Who was the guy who did the last three Harry Potter movies.
Okay.
And with the Harry Potter clout and Warner Brothers, to get him to agree to do Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the Harry Potter spinoff that comes out later this year, mm-hmm. he got them to agree to finance Tarzan.
Nice.
So that's how that came about. That's why we have a Tarzan movie, because David Yates wanted it.
I thought Alexander Skarsgård was an interesting choice.
Sure, I think he's actually a classical choice, right? Because
I was about to say he's very white, very blonde, tall, and very buff.
Blonde, lean. Yeah. I actually felt like yes,
totally.
That's good casting there for a Tarzan character who I don't know if I like. I don't know if I like Tarzan, honestly. I guess I'm gonna see this movie and decide whether or not I actually like this character. Because I never really thought about it. If I was going to go with Edgar Rice Burroughs' characters, I'd go John Carter of Mars.
Well, of course.
That's way cooler.
Yeah, 100%. Tarzan. I mean, granted, it is...
Tarzan just feels vaguely racist, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, John Carter of Mars isn't... Dude's a freaking Confederate soldier.
He is a Confederate soldier, but then he's also learning to like work with the red people against the green... Or the green people against the red people.
I know, which is weird for being a Confederate soldier.
Yeah. I don't know which side's supposed to be the Negro side.
One's darker?
Yeah, I don't think that one works that way. But this one feels like, the whole white savior thing, like the white man amongst the savages.
Yeah.
And like he learns their ways, but then he grows beyond that and becomes civilized.
It's a story of the times.
Yeah. Or if it's a story of those times, yes. Why are we telling it now in 2016?
Because it's not 1916. We like classical storytelling.
I guess so. Well, David Yates likes classical storytelling, so we'll see if we like the movie. It's coming out.
Speaking of Skarsgårds, Alexander's Padre's got a movie coming out, Our Kind of Traitor.
Oh, okay, there we go.
With Stellan.
Skarsgård Weekend.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Very good. And who's that new Skarsgård? He's going to be it. The Pennywise the Clown in it.
Yeah.
Oh.
He is.
Yeah.
The young Skarsgård. The even younger Skarsgård.
He's like Alexander's brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a creepy face. No, I mean, Tim Curry's always going to be.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, well, I saw a picture of him and I was like, but then it's all about the makeup and everything. It is. And Tim Curry goes, the guy was dark to darkness and legend, man.
I love it.
What's going on this week?
The Purge : Election Year. If you've seen the trailer, you've already seen the entire movie.
Yeah, you've seen definitely 90% of the movie for sure. I am looking forward to The Purge, though.
Well, of course.
Because I like the second one.
Well,
I didn't like the first one, but I like the second one.
I just like seeing Frank Grillo kill people.
That too. Frank Grillo is fantastic. Yeah. He's pretty great. He should have been the Punisher. I still think... I like the Punisher. I still think he should have been the Punisher.
Yeah, especially because he was Crossbones for a whole, 10 seconds?
Yeah, he was wasted in that movie. Freaking Marvel.
And last but certainly not least, Steven Spielberg's Disney's The BFG. It's really weird that Steven Spielberg is making a Doom movie.
A movie about one of the weapons in Doom.
I know, right?
Specifically.
The big fucking gun? Gun. It's kind of weird. Yeah, strange.
The weird thing. Roald Dahl's The BFG. It's Spielberg's... Spielberg's first film with Disney.
Yeah.
After all these years.
Which is... Well, I mean...
And he said it was always been a dream of his to make a movie with Disney.
Which is kind of surprising because of the... type of director that he is and the type of movies that he does.
Sure, you would
think they're very...
E.T. could have been like a...
Well,
Disney
no, exactly. They're very in that vein of...
Family films.
Family films, you know? There's not a lot of cursing, not a lot of killing, not a lot of, they're all very light story. I mean, they can be heavy, quote-unquote, but not real,
They can get real dark.
Yeah.
But not like...
perfectly violent.
More like sadistic. Yeah. Sure. It is surprising. And I love Spielberg.
I do too.
Of course.
Who doesn't like Spielberg, right?
Like
cynical assholes don't like Spielberg. That's it. Men's rights activists don't like Spielberg. Those are the type of people that don't like Spielberg.
Shame.
But having seen all the marketing and the trailers and the commercials for this movie, I can't say I'm excited to see it. Not you either?
I'm neutral. I'm just like,
Yeah, right. Ambivalent. Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, I'm going to see it because it's Spielberg.
Right.
Yeah. But... I don't really have high hopes. My expectations aren't that low, though.
I need to see a behind the scenes or something before.
They've been showing some in front of movies.
Have they?
Yeah, before even they show the trailers, they've been showing two commercials. One for Legend of Tarzan, that's trying to get you to donate money to save elephants. And then a BFG behind the scenes commercial that shows like Mark Rylance with all the dots on his face. And there, it's just an EPK, basic press kit package. What is it, like 60 seconds long, maybe a minute and a half? You know, so there's stuff like that online if you want to see that. But and then Spielberg, like, sitting there. I love Spielberg. I love his work. But he's sitting there very pretentiously with his, like, his fingers clasped together. And he's like,
Very thoughtful.
The way he talks and motions and the way he speaks. He's like, it's a book loved the world around. I'm like, who speaks like that? No one speaks like that, Steven.
Steven Spielberg.
Come on, brother. He used to be a normal person. Anyway, I still love his movies. No. So I'm going to see it. Not really looking forward to it. All right.
I mean, agreed.
Yeah. And I'm thinking too, then also, I feel like that's the general feeling, right, for these movies, for both Tarzan and BFG.
Mm-hmm.
Is Finding Dory going to be number one again next weekend?
Probably.
Ahead of those movies?
I would think so.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah.
Right? If that makes like 45 million, then the other ones came and cracked 40. Ooh, that'd be bad.
Mm.
That'd be bad if BFG can't even make 40 million. I guess we'll find out. So that's it for next weekend.
Yep.
For the 4th of July weekend. It's a big holiday weekend.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people, well, you know, people like to barbecue and go out on 4th of July. So I guess we'll see. So that's, all right, those are new movies coming out in theaters. Thank you, Drew. Now it's time for everyone's weekly prescription of what to do with their lives. If you don't know what are you doing with your life, if you need some direction, if you're having problems, this is the person that is going to set you straight in 15 to 30 second increments once a week. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for
you must be Doc Holliday.
Well, that's the rumor.
Dr. Strangelove, do we have anything like that in the works?
They call me Dr. Manhattan.
And Bridget Fonda.
Do doctors know more about sex?
Doc Hollywood.
The doctor is in. Dr. Drew, please take it away.
Well, Chris, you know, people always complain that, you know, there are no original movies, no good movies, this, no that. Uh-huh. Everything's comic books and family and blah,
Hollywood
blah, 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 blah.
Is creatively bankrupt.
Correct. And I say screw that.
Whoa! Oh.
Go see The Neon Demon. Go watch The Shallows. Go watch all these tiny little movies that have come out this summer. You know, all of the counter-programming. Weird-ass shit is being made. You just need to watch it. Drewster out.
Thank you very much, Drewster Cogburn, with the wise words. Very, very good. That's the kind of stuff I like to scream from the rooftops. So I appreciate it. Drew, all right, guys, let's take a break, okay? Drew looks like he needs to smoke a cigarette.
Sure.
Look at him. He's jittering. He's going crazy over there. And I can do a little bit of quick editing here, so we're going to take a break, and then we're going to do the second half of the show, all right? Before we do that, we have some music for you guys. It's the Crespo Disco. Mention how I like the soundtrack for The Neon Demon, the Cliff Martinez soundtrack. He's done the last few Nicholas Winding Refn scores since Drive, I think. And it's just very cool, very good music. So I pulled a couple of tracks from that. I recommend people checking it out. And we'll be back with the second half of the show. You guys ready?
I'll be here.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's do this. Thank you.
This is Eric from Talking Nonsense with Eric and Stacy. Join us every Sunday, 9 p.m. Central on Alt360Radio.com. We're talking news, idiot politicians, movies, TV, Darwin Award nominees, comedy, sports. We're basically two married idiots turning brain thoughts into mouthwords. That's Talking Nonsense every Sunday, 9 p.m. Central on Alt360Radio.com. If you miss the show live, grab the podcast at ericandstacyradio.com, Stitcher Radio, or iTunes. Thank you.
Welcome to the Crespo Dome.
All right, we are back with the show. Episode 181 is still underway. I'm hanging out with Drusa Cogburn and Jen Vargas. Guys.
Yo. Yellow.
Let's get the plugs out of the way. Drew, where can people find you online?
At antihero419 all over the interwebs.
Tweet Drew your favorite gifs from America's Got Talent. Jen.
Please don't.
Where can people find you on interwebs?
I am at Jen Vargas, V-A-R-G-A-S. All over the interwebs.
Nice and simple. Your actual name.
Yes.
Together.
It boom. Is me.
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
All
you're,
of it.
You're out there.
Google Plus.
Any organizations or groups that you want to plug that you're working with these days?
Because
I know you do a lot of. You're always out there doing something.
I do, and it's been a couple of emotional weeks for Orlando.
Yes, it has been. Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm working with a couple of groups. There is a project that's going on at the Dr. Phillips Center on Tuesday called Beautiful Together, an artistic journey toward hope.
Okay.
And I'm not part of that show, but after that show, following in the Cinef Art Plaza, there's going to be angels there. Like, you know how they got the angels over at Orlando Shakes to block out the Westboro protesters?
Yes. I did not hear about that, but that sounds about right.
There were people with giant sheet wings that were basically blocking the view so the protesters couldn't mess with the people having a goddamn funeral.
Very good. Very good.
Okay. So after the Beautiful Together, I'm going to be part of that visual. I don't know if I'm an angel yet or an ally.
You're going to find out when you get there?
I will. I mean, there's 100-something volunteers. There's over 50 organizations involved in this, from Voci Dance to Dr. Phillips Center, just anybody and everybody, Orlando Ballet.
Like, sure.
So many different things, and all the proceeds go to the One Orlando Fund.
Very good.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
And it's just to see the way Orlando's come together.
Yeah,
it's
you know, amazing. Yeah, I mentioned before on this show a couple weeks ago that it's a bummer that it takes such a tragedy for it to happen, but it's nice to see everyone really come together and the way we can see that there are so many people that are on the same page.
Right.
You know, we are all united together in love and hope, hopefully, and we'll push forward as a community, and it's what's been happening.
Yes, the coolest thing that I've seen, it's not just buying a shirt or wearing a pride flag or wearing a ribbon. It's about inclusion.
Yeah.
And Orlando, obviously, we're a town of that.
Yeah.
We get it.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how, I always see online, like, Orlando was ranked very highly for gay-friendly cities in America, especially for its size, for being a medium-sized town. Yep. And
it's a hospitality industry.
The hospitality industry does that. Disney actually embracing gay days and not shutting that down when that propped up and, making it a part of what they do every year went a big, long way towards that.
JetBlue, Delta, they've all been the local chapters of JetBlue and Delta specifically.
Have been stepping up. And
amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the Lake Eola Vigil, Delta had a huge rainbow flag that they borrowed from someone who would have like a 50-foot flag randomly.
Interesting, right?
They did a walk, I think, around Lake Eola and came back, and it was just beautiful.
Oh, very cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Very nice.
It was neat.
That was at that vigil where like 50,000 people showed up.
Man, yes, sir.
That was a big deal. I saw all those pictures online.
It was great. It
looked insane. Looked like a lot of, almost a bit of a logistics nightmare, but it seemed like it went off without a hitch pretty much.
Yeah, and that no one complained. Everybody, it was uncharacteristically cool that day.
Yeah.
And breezy.
Yeah, it was. I remember.
And we had a rainbow before. Which
it worked out.
Tiny bit of rain.
Yeah, it worked out quite well. Yeah, that was good stuff.
It's kind
of
crazy.
Anything else you want to throw out there for people? Or?
I'm also doing something called Pulse of Our Heartbeat.
Okay.
A local woman named Kelly Sharkey.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly Green is her married name. She wrote a song.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to do kind of a cool thing where she's broadcasting this anthem. She calls it A Hug for Orlando.
Okay.
And she wrote a song. Orlando. It's just a real quick song or whatever, but she wants people from around Orlando and around the world to broadcast at the same time.
Okay.
To do kind of a social collaborative.
Right. Everyone engaging in the same thing at the same moment. It would be playing a short song. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's cool. That's going to happen. It's called a flash cast.
Okay.
Which is neat. It's going to happen Wednesday the 29th at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Okay. Cool.
So that's cool. We're going to be gathering over at WMFE.
to do a song, to sing part of the song. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now that I have my voice back, I've been ill. Oh, yeah. I can actually sing parts of the song.
Yeah, you get down with the song itself. Right?
Yeah.
Very good.
So, yeah, it's a lot of togetherness, a lot of coolness.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent.
And also Film Slam.
When's the Film Slam coming
next
up?
Next Film Slam is July 10th
okay.
at 1 p.m. at Inzion.
Okay, yeah. There you go.
I'm trying to program.
July 10th is a Sunday, right?
Yes, okay. It is. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It, I'm trying to do themes mm-hmm. since I took over from Tim
sure.
in December.
Yeah.
And the themes seem to be working. We had our first ever Film Slam, which was amazing. All female filmmakers.
Nice.
It was the whole program.
That's awesome.
Very well attended. The ladies were on point on social media. We had a fantastic turnout.
Very good.
So that's going to be a permanent fixture with Film Slam going forward.
Yeah.
And then
theming it out.
Of course.
Great.
And then in February we had a love, but it's twisted love. Love. Just interpretation of love.
Yeah.
We had.
Awesome.
Clowns getting intestines eaten out. Obsessive love. We ran the gamut.
Nice. Love does run the gamut, doesn't it?
It really does.
It causes a lot of good things and bad things.
Love is all around.
Love is all around. And so July 10th.
July 10th.
Next Film Slam. Awesome. People, check that out. Locals, check that out for sure.
Yes.
If you're in town on vacation, there's something to do that the locals would do.
And I Facebook Live the Q&As now.
Excellent.
I did Periscope, but Facebook Live is a little bit more stable in the theater.
Is it?
So people can tune into the Q&A. It's not manned
mm-hmm.
because I'm on stage. And
right. So you just set it there. Yeah. But at least people can then listen and check it out.
Yep.
So they can find you on Facebook for that. Or is that done through the Film Slam account? Or do you do that?
That's done through the Film Slam account.
Okay. So find the Film Slam Facebook account and you can check out that live feed.
Right. So at Inzion Film Slam.
Excellent. So much going on.
Tons.
Always busy. I know you'd always be good for some good plugs. Thank you so much.
And The Infiltrator is happening.
The Bryan Cranston movie?
Mm-hmm. The Tampa premiere is happening July 6th. That's next week.
The Tampa premiere. Is that the Southeast premiere or the Florida premiere? Or
I'm not sure. I'd have to look at it.
Because it doesn't come out wide until...
The 13th.
The 13th. So
mm-hmm. But Bryan Cranston, Benjamin Bratt, and the director who... Brad Furman?
I don't know who's directing it.
I
didn't check.
Please excuse.
I've seen the trailer a bunch in the last few weeks, right, Drew? We've seen the Infiltrator trailer a bunch of times. Yep. But it doesn't mention the director in the trailer, though.
I will be going to that premiere.
Very cool. So if people follow you on Twitter, I'm sure they could see some pictures from there and things like that.
Me and Central Florida Top 5. I'll be doing some stuff on Central Florida Top 5.
Very cool.
As well.
If you're going to the premiere, you'll be in Tampa. Look for Jen.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Say hi. Excellent. Excellent. All right. And the show, guys, follow us on Twitter at CrespoDiso, Facebook, Cinema CrespoDiso, Instagram, Cinema CrespoDiso.
Do it.
Let's get started with Billy D's Death of the Movies. How's that sound, Drew? You ready for that?
Sounds good.
Alrighty. Theme song for Billy D. Death of the Movies. Our New York City senior correspondent Billy D hits us up every week and we read his film reviews on the show. Well, Drew reads the film review. We sit here and we listen to it. So, Drew Sikogran, if you don't mind, please take it away.
What is up, my dudes?
What's up, Billy?
This week has been quite the whirlwind. I caught Pup last night.
Pup!
At the Music Hall of Williamsburg. And let me tell you, if the movies aren't trying to kill me, Punk Rock and the kids definitely are.
Punk Rock, Billy.
Awesome show.
Billy, you're too old to be going to punk rock shows, man. You've probably got paid to take some pictures.
In between gigs and work, I caught up with a friend and we talked about movies and food and movies about food. He mentioned a movie I hadn't seen in over 20 years and haven't thought of in about as long, but probably shaped my feelings as an adult on food, food trends, and one food in particular. Yogurt.
Yogurt?
So, I lifted the restrictions on physical media and ordered the 1985 disaster piece, The Stuff.
The Stuff? Have you heard of The Stuff?
I'm scared already.
No, right? So, non-specific.
Holy crap, this movie is not good. It's not awful. It's great / ambitious / terrible.
Great and ambitious.
Wow.
And terrible, okay.
The Stuff is like The Blob meets Night of the Comet.
Hmm.
With an anti-corporate message.
Oh.
It's about two yokels that start eating this white stuff that comes bubbling out of the ground near a mine. It tastes sweet and is instantly addictive.
Wait, who's Who's eating stuff, white stuff, but bubbling out of the ground?
These guys.
I see white stuff bubbling out of the ground. I'm calling EPA.
Yeah, well, apparently they ate it and it was sweet and addictive.
And they stuck their faces in
it. Yep. They market it as a quote-unquote low-calorie, low-fat superfood, and it takes over the nation. Meanwhile, a kid freaks out in Long Island, destroying displays and screaming about how it's alive. And of course, it's alive.
The goo is alive.
So our hero, a guy who looks so dumb, another character has to remind the audience he's smarter than he appears. About our hero, it's probably the only movie I can think of where the hero is a quote-unquote corporate saboteur. Someone saw Willy Wonka and said, there's a movie in this Slugworth character.
The Slugworth movie.
Slugworth, yes. The stuff is a horror movie that is made for children, I guess? I'm not sure who this is made for. It isn't violent or gory, but it has some really awesome practical effects. It's dumb and smart at the same time, with an odd anti-consumer message and warnings about food trends and corporate dickery, and way ahead of its time.
Corporate dickery.
Yep. The stuff is pretty fucking great for a terrible movie. It's surprisingly ripe for a remake that could be a lot of fun in today's world of vegan, gluten-free, soy, tempeh, carb-free nonsense. I saw this as a young kid and it made me forever suspicious of yogurt. Change your opinion of yogurt today.
Yogurt.
Get the stuff.
Yogurt's the white stuff.
Stay cool, Billy Dee.
That sounds fun. The stuff sounds like a fun movie.
I was going to ask about kids? The gluten thing.
The gluten free?
Yeah, if it was gluten free.
Stuff sounds gluten free.
It does sound gluten free.
Yeah,
but
yeah, it's always good.
Gluten free, low cal. No soy.
Gluten free is good because.
Or it can be all soy, whatever.
Because of the glue.
All you gotta do is tell them. You just gotta tell people what they wanna hear.
Why are people eating glue anyway?
I don't know. Mm. I'm still thinking about marketing gluten free water.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And of course, yeah, I have to charge more money because it's gluten free.
Right.
You know,
I had to go through the degluteinizing process.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. Which is when you swish around your mouth and spit it back into the bottle and hand it to right in front of them.
The degluteinizing process when I take it out of the tap.
That's how I degluteinize water. Guys, it's time for Drusa Cogburn versus the world. Drew, you are 9-6. You lost last week to Simon Time.
Correct.
Simon Time's a trivia master, so we're not going to hold it against you, but you better do better next time against him. In the meantime, Jen, you're here representing the world.
Oh, boy.
This week's game is called... No pressure whatsoever. This week's game is called Made Unmade.
In Manhattan?
Made Unmade in Manhattan. I'm going to give you a movie title. You tell me if it got made or if it didn't get made.
Oh, boy.
Okay. So it's not fake movies.
Yeah,
It's actual movie projects that never got filmed.
Correct.
Okay.
So since you lost last week, you got to go first, Jen, on behalf of the world. We have two groups of five, A and B. Choose, please, and choose wisely. I got to say.
We'll go with B.
All right, here we go. Is this movie made or unmade? Number one, Blood Meridian.
Made.
Incorrect. That's yet to have been made. Number two. The Man Who Killed Don Keeley.
Ooh. Unmade?
That is correct. Terry Gilliam plans to start shooting it this fall.
Okay, he's trying it again.
Number three, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective Jr.
Ooh, that's kind of tricky. I'm going to say unmade.
Ooh, that was definitely a movie that got made and released on DVD.
Why?
I know.
Exactly. Number four. At the Mountains of Madness.
I'm going to say unmade.
That is correct. That's Guillermo del Toro's adaptation that never got off the ground. And finally, number five, Showgirls 2, Pennies from Heaven.
Oh, my God. I'm going to say... Oh, gosh.
That's a flip of a coin right there.
I know. I'm going to say made.
That's correct.
All right.
That movie was actually real.
Please tell me somebody threw pennies at strippers in that movie.
Hopefully.
And they probably stuck.
Because they're all sweaty. All right, Drew, Group A, you ready? Was this movie made or unmade? This is one of those weird coincidence things that there's no shenanigans. No shenanigans, I swear. All right, number one, made or unmade? The Sandlot 2.
Made.
That's correct. Made a big deal about it earlier. I did the game yesterday. I forgot about that was an answer. Number two, Superman Lives.
Unmade.
That's correct. That's the Tim Burton one with Nick Cage. Number three, Easy Rider, The Ride Back.
made?
Yeah, that's correct.
Wow, really? Wow. Somebody made that?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Can you believe it? Number four, Jingle All the Way 2.
Made.
That's correct, with Larry the Cable Guy. And number five, Megalopolis.
Unmade.
That is correct. Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis never got made. Drew Sircogran is the winner. Good job, Drew.
Oh, sorry, world. I have failed you.
10 and 6.
Redemption. Sweet, sweet redemption.
Write that down there. And alrighty. You can hit Billy D on Twitter at I Love Blood. Thank you for the review of 1985's
The Stuff.
It's, what's next? Oh, you know what's next? I love this segment. This is the one where the people hit us up with their movie reviews, their questions, their topics, whatever they want to talk about. And we call that the voice of the people, a.k.a. the Vox Populi.
That moment you've all been waiting for. The world famous
Vox Populi.
Vox Populi.
Vox Populi.
Vox Populi.
Vox Populi.
Drew Sircogran, you have him over there. That one, that's the four movie news stories from Rage Against Twit.
Mm-hmm.
Do that one last.
Okay.
All right.
On Facebook.
Because we'll use that to transition into movie news. Mm-hmm. Okay. On Facebook.
EJ Cantu got at us.
What's up, EJ?
Watchmen, best Zack Snyder movie or Sucker Punch?
Oh, that's an interesting way to phrase that question.
Yeah, seeing how it's probably his best movie followed by his worst movie.
Have you seen these movies, Jen?
I have seen The Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
I've not seen
Sucker Punch.
Sucker Punch.
Zack Snyder. Do you have an opinion on the guy, on his movies, on his films?
Mm,
not really.
Not anything.
He's just over there doing his thing. Not he's bothering
doing,
you.
He's doing slow motion things.
Doing slow motion things.
And ripped dudes.
Yeah, and his the crush, the velvety look he puts on everything.
Yeah.
That it's like fake grain.
Yeah.
Almost.
I know, right?
Weird. So gritty.
Yeah, it's like. We don't have film grain anymore, so I have to invent a grain to
dirty it up.
To give our movie a texture again, or else it looks like home video, like we're watching General Hospital or the Spanish version, Hospital General.
Sweet.
Con Roberto Biemro.
So I'm going with Watchmen as the best one because Sucker Punch is a beautiful mess.
Yeah, yeah. For Zack Snyder movies, if I was talking about best movies, it's either Dawn of the Dead, the remake, 300. Or Watchmen. Those are your three options. Because otherwise, it's Sucker Punch, Man of Steel, and Batman v Superman, and those are lesser efforts.
Yes.
I like Man of Steel, but it's a bit less.
Still lesser.
I would go with. I think I might go with Dawn of the Dead.
Okay.
I haven't seen it in a minute, but I remember liking it a lot. Like, being surprised by how well it was made. 300's great. I do love Watchmen, though. Yeah. Watchmen was just on Sci-Fi the other day.
Yeah.
Like, it was just starting. The opening credits and everything. And I watched, the first 15, 20 minutes up through the first commercial break. I didn't plan on it, and I got sucked into it.
It happens. It's a good story.
But then the commercial break came, and it broke the spell. And I was like, ah, there's Family Feud somewhere in my family.
Good soundtrack.
Family Feud soundtrack, yeah.
Yeah, too, yeah.
Yeah, the Watchmen soundtrack is very cool. Definitely go with Watchmen on that one.
Cremella Lake got at us.
What's up, Cremella?
I finally watched Lost Souls on Netflix after listening to one of your previous podcasts.
Nice. Lost Souls, real quick. It's a documentary on Netflix, and it's the making. It's a documentary about the making of The Island of Dr. Moreau, that Val Kilmer, Marlon Brando movie from the 90s. The terrible movie. And it's a documentary about
how it could have been so good.
It could have been so good, and the original director had a brilliant idea. They worked on this movie for 4 years, and then 2 days into production, he got fired.
Oh.
And then someone else took over. John Frankenheimer took over, and for him, it was just a paycheck. And Marlon Brando was just a paycheck, and Val Kilmer was going through a divorce, so he was going crazy.
Mm.
It's a crazy documentary about the making of a terrible film. It's worth watching, more so than the actual movie, Down with Dr. Moreau.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like.
That's for sure.
It takes a lot of bad mojo to produce one of the worst clusterfuck movies of all time.
A lot of bad mojo.
I'm certain this documentary will be remade into a theatrical version at some point in the future because you just can't write something so ridiculous as what happened behind the scenes of The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah, I mean, like, the director who got fired, he instead of going home, because it was all shot on location somewhere, Malta or something.
He decided to stay and fuck around.
He stayed, and, he slept in the hut of, a local villager, and then he would go to the makeup people in the morning, and they would put on makeup so he looked like one of the extras. And then the director that got fired hung out on the set as an extra to keep an eye on everything.
Awkward.
Yeah. That guy was a little crazy. He also only made two movies before that, and then that was his third movie. He got fired from it. Hasn't made a movie since. Richard Stanley. Yeah, his other two movies are good.
Really good. And he is a very interesting, smart man.
Yeah, yeah, he is. Yeah, because he's also a talking head in the Jodorowsky's Dune documentary.
Yeah.
Paul
Hine got at us.
What's up, Paul?
It's got a 10 Cloverfield Lane review.
Nice. Have you seen 10 Cloverfield Lane?
Have not.
It's a fun one.
I went into this with a dull memory of the original Cloverfield, and I'm glad to say that it didn't matter.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Goodman is amazing. Mm-hmm. Everything leading up to the escape was an awesome ride. Then the movie takes a turn. The change in tone at the end of the movie wasn't bad, just unexpected.
Huh.
Seems like a good jumping off point for future Cloverfield movies.
Interesting.
More than anything, this movie makes me want a Fallout-inspired movie. Vaults and nuclear Fallout ghouls should cross over well.
Agreed. A couple things to unpack in that one. So you haven't seen it.
I haven't, but I'm interested.
A lot of people... I find this very interesting. A lot of people generally like... the first, if it's a 90-minute movie, everyone likes the first 80 minutes. Yeah. Everyone likes the first 80 minutes. And then the movie starts getting to its climax. And the movie actually has a payoff, which is, going into it, I was afraid of that. Afraid that it wasn't going to have a solid...
No payoff.
Yeah, no good payoff, or it wouldn't have a solid ending. It would puss out somehow. But they had an ending, and they went for it. And it is a little jarring if you're not ready for it.
It's such a change of pace.
It is.
It's almost like... You
go from claustrophobic thriller to something different.
Yeah,
very quickly.
It's almost like it's the ending of a different movie.
Yeah, it is.
It's like claustrophobic thriller sci-fi.
And then the end of like a sci-fi
and not just
horror
sci-fi,
action
like
film.
Big sci-fi.
Yeah,
it's like what?
Implying a big scene that, but then also implies much bigger.
Exactly.
Stuff.
So am I going to get vertigo from this?
No. I think you'll find it exciting. But what I'm saying is, you may be one of the people who you get to the ending and you're like,
fuck this,
and you're like, nah, not feeling it. I would like something different. I saw the ending and I was like, oh, this is crazy. I really liked it. So then I was surprised when I went online and found a lot of people that didn't. But then last week we had a review. I forgot who reviewed it last week. Was it Gabe? Rage Against Twit?
Somebody.
I think so. He reviewed it and he thought the ending was like, A lot, similar to Paul, where he was like, it happened. He was like, I get it. Wasn't too big on it. Sam, who's been on the show from Tom and Dan, spoke to her on Twitter. She did not like the ending at all. Yeah. She thought the ending was whack.
Mm-hmm.
So...
whack yo.
Yeah, whack AF, as the kids like to tweet, because it both saves characters and it's chased.
Delete your account.
Oh, shit! DYA.
Snap yo.
Snap back. I think it's a good movie. And yeah, Paul's right. It's a nice springboard for future Cloverfield movies, where the idea is that instead of them all being connected story-wise...
they're all in the same universe.
It's like the Twilight Zone.
Yep.
You know, different stories... that are in the similar vein story. Like a Black Mirror type thing.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm fine with that.
Me too.
I like to see more low budget things like that. And it's also always... things like that are good for young directors and people just break it into the business. And it's good for them to cut their teeth on. You know, give people a chance, et cetera, et cetera.
When I first heard it was coming out, I was like, oh, okay. But then I saw the trailer and saw John Goodman.
Goodman's
he's amazing.
Paul
I was
right.
Like, oh.
Paul is right about that. He is amazing.
He's underrated.
Very underrated.
He's awesome.
Weirdly underrated, right? Because I guess he's been around for so long.
Yeah.
Well, he's had a lot of hits, but he's had a lot of misses.
He's been in lots of... Ralph.
I was about to say, King Ralph. Yes. Come on. Case in point.
But he should be appreciated more. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, the lead.
Killed it.
Oh, she's so good.
Yeah.
I loved her in that. She was fantastic. And she's on the show now on CBS called Brain Dead. That's like something about alien bugs that are infecting people's minds or something.
Sweet.
It's kind of like a horror sci-fi type thing.
Huh.
But the reviews for it haven't been too hot. I still want to see it though because it's her and I like the premise. But then it's CBS.
CBS, it's weird.
It's a weird thing, right? Yeah,
sounds like a CW thing.
At the very least, it was going to be network, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're the ones that do the Buffy and they get weird and supernatural with it. Yeah. Fox maybe?
Yeah.
Is that all from Paul?
Mm-hmm.
What's up, Paul? We appreciate it. Bye, Paul.
Ron out in L.A. got at us.
What's up, Ron in L.A.?
So I'm sitting here watching Neon Demon.
Hey, well, are you writing this in the theater, dude?
We'll get to that.
Put your phone away.
We'll get to that. And it's very pretty and interesting shots. But for the life of me, I don't see why everyone thinks Elle Fanning is so fucking beautiful.
No.
First Maleficent, then this. When she was on the screen, I was nodding off to sleep. But once the focus shifted, I woke up. too bad that happened for three quarters of the movie in a film that I can write this during the last quarter of the film. I get the journey and message of the film, and again, visually stimulated me, and with great music. But ugh, I wish I knew how everyone saw her so captivating. I mean, I can appreciate a woman every now and then, but she's just some pasty-ass white girl. Jeez. Jenna Malone is more intriguing. Oh well, maybe I'll find her super hot. Just FYI, the visuals of the credits are mesmerizing. I watched them as I typed. Also, South Pop $2 at the theater.
Okay, finish it. So much.
And I got what I paid for it. It wasn't all bad, but some of the jokes could have stuck better. Maybe they could have focused more on the music. It should have been either a musical or flat out a shotgun of jokes. So, apparently it was worth the $2, I guess.
Popstar's already at the Dollar Theater in L.A.?
Yeah.
Damn, that's quick. All right, first off, so Elle Fanning does play a character she's a natural beauty, they keep saying. And she's so beautiful. She walks into the room, everyone's head turns. All the doors open for her. All the other models are instantly jealous.
Doves fly.
Yes, exactly. Like, what work have you had done? And she's like, work? What does that mean? You know, that type of thing.
What?
And similar to Ron and Drew, I think, we sort of talk about this. She's a pretty girl, Elle Fanning, but I don't think she's like not drop dead, gorgeous, beautiful, like just chicks as a supermodel.
I didn't think so either until I was forced to stare at her face for 2 hours.
And she does evolve. She evolves in the movie. In the beginning of the movie, she's more like a small town girl. By the end, she's dressed much more sexually, makeup on. Like she's bought into the model fashion industry where the character grows, right? But even by the end, I was like, yeah, she's pretty, but I wouldn't, like, you know, fall all over myself for her.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
So I agree with Ron in that, but also gotta say, you know, Ron, it's, you know, no open secret, brother. No. You're gay. Man.
Yeah.
And so, you're not gonna find basically skinny white girl attractive. We get it. It's not in your bag, bro. It's cool. You don't have to. In some way, I can be like, yeah, Brad Pitt's a good-looking man. Don't take my opinion on what men are good-looking or not.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
The people tell me Brad Pitt looks good-looking, so sure.
I know, so I buy it.
Yeah.
I'm like, sure. I don't look like that, so sure. Yeah. Okay. I get it. That makes sense to me. I can't believe Pops at the Dollar Theater. That's blowing my mind. That movie just came out like 2 weeks ago.
Yes, already in the Dollar Theater in LA.
Blowing my mind.
It's on DVD tomorrow.
I know, right? They're supposed to wait 3 months, and they're like, nope, we need to make this money back.
Now.
This cost us weight that Adam Levine hologram was way too expensive to make. So that's it from the Vox Populi there?
No, we got the email.
Yeah. You can email us, cinemacrespedisto@gmail.com. Go.
From where'd you guys twit?
Awesome, our homeboy.
It's entitled, Like My Armpits This Summer, This News Is Stinking Hot.
Oh.
All right, so here we go. Eli Roth to direct Bruce Willis in a Death Wish remake.
Oh, that was a very descriptive subject title there, but you were talking about your armpits.
It sounds something.
I know, what the hell? Okay, so we have some news stories for us. Eli Roth, who you mentioned earlier, mostly directs horror, is doing the Death Wish remake with Bruce Willis. I think Bruce Willis was attached to it first, and they were looking for a director, and Eli Roth has just jumped on. So this has potential to be his biggest hit since Cabin Fever.
Yeah.
Financially. It also gives him a chance to do something a little different. Instead of being horror, it's going to be...
It'll just be perfectly violent.
Very violent. Crazy violent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I necessarily want to see this movie, though. I mean, Bruce Willis, I'm bored with Bruce Willis now. When was the last time he was good in something?
It's been a while, but maybe...
Looper? He was going to Looper.
Cricket.
Maybe he can go all fucking Frank Castle and some motherfuckers and get horrifically violent.
Well, that's what's going to happen. It's a Death Wish movie.
Yeah.
Directed by Eli Roth. So it's going to be something horrible is going to happen in the games with his family, and then he's going to go around town shooting and maiming and killing people in horribly, horrible ways.
Yeah.
The best version of this movie is James Wan's Death Sentence, which we talked about on the show a couple weeks ago. He made a movie... where instead of Death Wish and it's a revenge fantasy, and at the end, Paul Kiersey kills the bad guys and he's the hero, the vigilante hero. In Death Sentence, Kevin Bacon is the lead, and he goes after the gang that kills his family, and then it just becomes a circle of violence, and at the end, they're all just laying around, bleeding and dying.
And he is really fucked up.
Yeah, and they were just like, all of them are sitting there, like, none of this was worth it.
No.
The end. Wow. Yeah, very much more straightforward and honest.
All right.
Written by the same guy that wrote the first Death Wish movie. He wrote the book that became the first movie, and then the movie came out and it got super popular, and then he was like, oh no, this was not the message I want to put out there about the vigilanteism and the kind of right wing type of guns first thing. Mm-hmm. He was thinking this back in the 70s, and imagine today if you found out that Death Wish is being made again. Yeah. You'd probably be pissed off.
More than likely.
If that guy's even still alive, I don't even know the name of that author.
Who knows?
Fuck the guy, he's probably dead. What else you got over there?
Warner Brothers pushes Lego Movie 2 release to 2019.
Everything.
Yeah, February 2019. That movie, by the time it comes out, it'll be 5 years
between
the first one and the second one. They do have Lego Batman 2017.
Oh, which looks like it's going to be so good.
Doesn't look fantastic.
Oh my God. Seriously, I can't believe that Will Arnett is quite possibly the second best Batman that's ever been created.
And Ray Fiennes is Alfred.
Yep.
Zach Galifianakis as the Joker. Michael Cera as Robin.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
This movie's going to be so fucking silly.
Yeah, it's going to be perfect. This is going to be fun. Yeah. And we still got to wait till 2017.
Yep.
Oh. So we still got a ways to go. But that's going to be the middle movie between Lego Movie 1 and Lego Movie 2. Sure. So,
Lego movie.
So yeah, I got pushed. What else we got?
The Killing Joke trailer out. Find which theaters?
CinemaBlend. Yeah, if you go to the Fathom events, you know, they're always showing like older movies and Met Opera stuff. They're the ones showing the Joker Killing Joke. Nice. The Batman Killing Joke animated movie.
Check that out.
Which they show the trailer for that before at the end of the first look.
Yeah.
And the animation looks cheap.
Does it?
Yeah, it doesn't look that good. Like, the story's gonna be good because it's
the Killing Joke.
It's the Killing Joke. It's an adaptation of a very popular comic. But it looks like they didn't put that much money or style into the actual animation. It looks very basic.
Yeah.
Kind of disappointing. Like, I wouldn't want to see that on the big screen.
Okay.
You know, I would just wait for Netflix or HBO or wherever.
It'll end up there.
Yeah, eventually. On something. It seems like a missed opportunity. They finally do this. And it's also R-rated. This animated
basic R-rated.
It's the Killing Joke, man. It's got to be R-rated if they want to do it right.
A lot of crazy things happen. People die. The Joker goes off the rails. Even for the Joker, he goes off.
No,
the rails
exactly. The story, I mean, when you think the Joker, he's already off the rails. But he goes even. Further.
They got Mark Hamill to do the voice of the Joker.
Oh.
Got him to be back for it. And
he is. As far as I'm concerned, he is the voice of the Joker.
And it was one. He was like, it's one of the few things I want to come back for to do the Joker. Yeah. You know, so it's pretty cool.
Well, he gets to fuck with that dark side, man. He's all light side of the Force with the Joker, but the dark side.
He is, he's going to be Yoda in the next Star Wars movie. Not literally Yoda, but Yoda-like. Mm-hmm. So that's going on. What's going on?
And speaking of Star Wars, Darth Vader to return for Star Wars standalone film Rogue One.
Yes, that has been confirmed for sure.
Yes, James Earl Jones is coming back.
James Earl Jones has signed on. Now it's just a question of what's the size of the role. Is it going to be one scene? Is it going to be 5-10 minutes?
Well, I mean,
I don't think it's going to be in it that much.
It makes for the story that they're doing, seeing how it's set kind of in between episodes, 4 and 5?
2, 3, and 4.
3 and 4.
It's the one that happens like the end of this movie. If you watch Rogue One, when Rogue One ends, 10 minutes later in that timeline, A New Hope begins.
Okay.
That's how close the timelines are in these movies.
Gotcha. Yeah. So Vader has to be in the movie.
Exactly. Yeah. Ben Mendelsohn's going to be the main villain.
Okay.
Right? He's the one who's like running everything.
Yeah, he's got that weird white jacket and cape.
Yeah. Yeah, he looks awesome.
He's like, I am a superhero bureaucrat.
Yeah, he looks great. but the whole time he's like, you know, butting heads with the Palpatine's main enforcer.
Uh-oh.
Who is
Darth Vader.
This guy. Darth Vader. It's going to be great. Looking forward to it. It's going to be fun seeing Darth Vader back. And now, obviously, because it's James Earl Jones' voice.
No.
They get a series of people to play the physical role. It doesn't have to be the same guy.
No, they've seen somebody of approximately the same build.
Yeah, some guy who's like 6'4 and can fill out a suit, right?
Exactly. So they'll probably get a pro wrestler. I bet you'll be Kane.
Don't even Kane will command a salary. No, they'll go down to the mess hall and find the tallest guy spooning out the scrambled eggs in the morning.
You.
Yeah,
like, you, come here.
Bro.
You want to be Darth Vader?
You are about to have your big break, bro. all right, man, let's do this. All right, put on this mask and shut up. what they should do is then take James Earl Jones, and they should get him to say every single word in the English language and then put him into some sort of randomizer.
I was about to say a soundboard app.
Yes, because we love you, James Earl Jones. You are an old motherfucker, and
you're not gonna be around forever.
Same
thing. We need a Morgan Freeman one too, so he could so he can narrate all of my documentaries till the end of time.
He did Waze. He did the Waze app.
That's right.
That was awesome.
Schwarzenegger did one for Terminator Genesis.
That was so bad.
But it's just like, I don't know. It's limited.
Yeah.
Turn left.
200 feet. Turn left. I wanted him to say like, I fought Altamont Springs ahead.
Get more specific. Down.
Yeah, get down to the chopper and make a right in 500 yards. Why did it switch the yards? Star Trek is going to be back in Rogue One: A Star Wars Story, which is a horrible, horrible title.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Ranger. Good switch for that. That's a good transition. That's into the movie news. Let's fly through some of these. Roland Emmerich of Independence Day Resurgence has announced his next movie, and it somehow sounds dumber than anything he's ever done.
How is that possible?
Exactly.
He makes the worst movies ever.
It's unbelievable. He makes them with aplomb, but he makes them and they're horrible.
Uh-huh.
His next movie is called Moonfall. It is not a spoof of a James Bond film.
It sounds like it.
Moonfall
is the moon gonna fall?
They screwed up the moon's orbit, and it is hurtling towards Earth. So they have to, Armageddon style, send a crew of misfits up to the moon to fix its orbit.
I already can't wait to hear Neil deGrasse Tyson's review.
Yes.
Already.
He is going to shit all over that movie.
Already.
That makes me not want to see Independence Day Resurgence. I'll see what he says about that. Yeah, that would be perfect for him. Yeah. Yes. So that sounds horrible.
Yep.
Right? We all agree. Yep.
But hey, at least he'll...
But it sounds like entertainingly awful, though.
But here's the thing, if the scientists win, that I don't get to see the scene I want to see.
Of the moon crashing into the Earth?
Yeah, it's the only scene I want to see. When you say Moonfall, that's what I want to see.
Watch that scene in The Time Machine with Guy Pearce, where the moon is breaking up and everything is like, the Earth is falling apart. Yeah. It's not crashing into the Earth, but it's close. Watch that, and then watch the opening of Melancholia, where another planet crashes into Earth. Put those two together, you have a short film about the Earth crashing.
Well, I mean, eventually the moon is going to leave our orbit.
Well, it's going to leave our orbit.
Yeah.
Not crash into
and then with
gonna,
all our crust.
Oh, that's gonna fuck the planet up so bad.
Again. But by then the sun's gonna explode and either incinerate us or just leave us hanging as a cold, icy blue marble.
The moon goes first.
Does the moon go first?
Yeah, the moon goes first.
Okay.
Ladies first.
Yeah. And then the sun does its thing.
Speaking of ladies, Ghostbusters box office tracking. They have some numbers. Movie's coming out July 22nd.
It's gonna make $2.
A little bit more than $2. It's looking like opening weekend it might make between 40 and 50 million is what they're saying. And usually tracking is actually kind of soft. So I wouldn't be surprised if it makes around 60 million. That would put it, it's not great, that would put it around like somewhere between 30 and 35 all-time opening weekends for the month of July. A lot of movies open to around 40, 50, 60 million in July. That's actually kind of average. So if it does get around there, it's not like no big shakes. They're not going to be celebrating. But they're also not going to be disappointed. If it opens to less than 40, heads might roll.
Heads will roll.
Yeah. Ghostbusters 2 might not be happening. In which case, Paul Feig will then just go on to make Spy 2, because he's definitely wanting to do Spy 2.
Of course.
When he did The Heat, apparently, with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy, he wanted that to be his franchise. He wanted to make a whole bunch of Heats. Sandra Bullock put the kibosh on that.
I was like, fuck that shit.
Yeah, she did one. She did one. She was like, I had fun. No more. I'm done with these already. But he had so much fun making Spy that he's definitely going back to that one. He really likes the character he came up with Melissa McCarthy, and he really loves the Rob Ford character played by Jason Statham.
I was about to say.
He's my favorite character.
Where he's basically playing the guy from Crank.
He's playing every Jason Statham character smushed into one character.
Yeah.
With a level of lacking self-awareness that is amazing. And Paul Feig said in the second movie he will be even more boisterous and even less self-aware.
Awesome.
So expect a lot
so
more.
So he's going to show up in what, like a peacock outfit?
And he's going to be like, I just made this myself.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He's so absurd.
Like, everybody's just wearing, like, it's like at a funeral. Everybody's wearing black. He shows up, peacock. Just like, what's up, guys? How's it going?
What's up? This is normal. I watched that movie the second time around on DVD recently. I actually enjoyed it a little bit more. Like, I liked Rose Byrne more the second time around.
I mean, it was a lot funnier than I thought it was going
to
be.
Right? I'm telling you, man. You seem resistant. I knew you were resistant to it. I was like, I'm telling you, Spy's pretty good.
Well, I'm not the biggest fan of Melissa McCarthy.
I know.
I don't think she's all that funny.
But it was a good role for her, and I think she did well. I think it's important that, you know, a lot of people think automatically Melissa McCarthy, and obviously you think that because she's done it a bunch of times. She's playing a character where her weight, her figure is part of the humor.
Right.
The Spy character could have been played by anyone.
Correct.
Anyone. It could have been like a skinny nerd girl. Yeah. It could have been like an old lady.
Uh-huh.
Just someone that you don't look at and immediately think spy. You know, and that's a whole range of body types. So at no point in the movie does anyone ever comment on her weight or make any fat jokes. Not once. All the humor is based on her character in other ways. The type of woman she is, how she's allowed herself to be, set back. Because she likes Jude Law's spy character so much. She likes being the behind-the-scenes guy for him instead of stepping up and being her own spy thing. So it's a whole journey of discovery for her. It's actually a smart little emotional thing going on there. And the whole time around that, Jason Statham being insane. The Peter Serafinowicz, the guy who played Aldo, the Italian guy, and he's like super rapey, but at the end he's like, oh no, I'm just an English guy playing a role, or am I? so weird. I was like, that's a crazy character. I hope he comes back too, actually.
Super rapey?
Or is he? it's so weird. It's a weird movie and very enjoyable, so I'm looking forward to Spy 2 for sure. I'm also looking forward to Ghostbusters, because I do like Paul Feig.
I'm curious to see what they're going to do with it. And I'm curious to see...
With the tone, you mean? Or
with the tone.
The direction.
Also with the effects. Because...
Yeah. CG.
Yeah. With
all
the CG.
All CG.
Yeah, CG.
All CG, but will there be throwback CG in there? Or are they just going to try to top every...
They're going to top
thing
everything.
They've ever done.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it does look like modern CG, but it also looks like there's obviously a scene. If you look in the trailer...
Yeah.
When they're in Times Square, Times Square is changing into like the 70s Times Square. Like, there's an energy thing going downward.
Yeah.
And one of the posters on the left turns into a taxi driver poster. So,
that's not good.
Yes, right. It's a very nasty time period for New York. So something's taking them back in time. So I think, I feel like the ghosts are going to reflect that. There's going to be like a weird, it looks like there's like parade ghosts at some point.
But still,
it's a giant parade, but they're ghosts.
All the ghosts are going to be this new super shiny CG nonsense.
Oh, yeah, sure. With stuff. Sure. Yes. Looking as effervescent as possible or whatever. And also, they have not only Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is back, but it looks like there's Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, and then there's another big, white puffy dude. I think it's the logo.
It looks like the logo ghost, but
it's
half
the ghost that's in the circle with the red.
Yeah,
but half Stay Puft and like half zombie?
Yeah.
It's like his face is rotting off.
Well, it looks like maybe he got attacked or something. It's in the middle of the battle. Maybe he took a proton blast to the face and set him on fire or something. Yeah. Yeah, so it looks like the mascot became a ghost.
Huh.
I don't know. It looks weird. It looks fun. Hopefully it's good. I'm hoping that's going to be good. But we'll see.
I am curious. I do want to see that. The Twitter campaign that they've had is pretty cool.
What have they been doing? Have they been doing something special on Twitter?
Yeah, they ask you if you want to... it's basically a choose-your-own-adventure type thing on Twitter.
Yeah.
You pick a selection, and then it takes you to another tweet where it's like an enter-to-win type of contest.
Wow, weird.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Oh, that's interesting.
Other than Ecto Cooler coming back, that's really the only thing.
Ecto-Cooler.
I know.
I loved that stuff when I was a kid. But I also drank so much of it that I got sick of it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That and Crystal Pepsi.
Crystal Pepsi wasn't around long enough for me to get sick of it.
I know, right?
I miss the Crystal Pepsi.
I drank some Crystal Pepsi back in the day. I don't like Pepsi, but...
Oh, I stopped drinking sodas.
Good.
All beer for me.
That's much better.
Yeah, I think it is.
Much better choice.
There's less...
His body actually has to turn the carbohydrates into sugar
first. It's actually got
to
do the work.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So something's being burned in the process. Also, this comes with a government warning, so I feel like it's safer. Uh-huh. Because I'm being warned ahead of time.
Yes.
Right.
Warning, this may fuck you up.
Mm. Oh, that's good. That's good stuff.
Good decision.
It's when it touches your lips, it's so delicious. Okay, this brings us to the end of the show.
Oh, so soon.
So soon, I know already.
So sad.
But the end of the show is my most favorite part of the show because it's so exciting. Because this is when we do the lightning round.
Oh, boy.
We give you the questions. You give us the answers. Time for the lightning round.
All right, here we go. I got 10 questions. I need 10 answers as soon as possible. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Drew, please start that clock.
Go.
Number one, Mr. Brown can moo. Can you?
Can zoo.
Ooh. Number two.
Ooh.
Why shoot a butler?
You can't shoot a mime?
I guess you can. Number three, what do people do all day?
Stuff.
Number four, if life is a bowl of cherries, what am I doing in the pits?
Smelling your armpits.
Ooh, my armpits are back. Number five, can you keep a secret?
Sure.
Number six.
Or can I?
Or can, ooh, number six, who moved my cheese?
It was me, dude.
Your soul.
Oh, soul cheese mover. Number seven, what is to be done?
Everything. And nothing at the same time.
Ah, so deep. Number eight. How do dinosaurs say goodnight?
Oh. I don't know what that was.
It was a dinosaur saying goodnight. I'm pretty sure. T-Rex, right? Number nine. Do androids dream of electric sheep?
Only if they are plugged in.
And number 10. Where's Waldo?
Over there.
Over where?
Over there.
Over there, Drew.
On third.
Dude, he's behind the couch.
Behind the couch, along with Jesus. Grab those swag
Jesus
bags.
Jesus is in between the cushions.
He's in between the cushions. Swag bag. You got the red bag. You got the blue bag.
Oh,
pick one. Which one do you want to see?
They both equal purple. It's so tough.
Oh, they do. Yeah, as a matter of fact.
Yes. Yeah. Oh. Okay, shiny. I dig shiny. So we'll do
blue. Shiny blue bag. Drew, break out the bag. Let Jen know what she may get to go home with today.
Oh, no.
You may get to go home with jokes and gags. Squirt gum.
Oh, my gosh.
You think it's gum, but it's not.
It's going to squirt people in the face.
A copy of season one of Heroes. Disc 4.
Excellent.
Ooh. So I can't tell you exactly which episodes those are, but it's from season 1.
Yeah, season 1, disc 4. Aww.
Yeah. A Cinnamon and Crest Medusa bootleg edition of Olympus Has Fallen and Cocktail, both from the same disc.
Fantastic double feature.
A metal fun spring, not a slinky.
Not a slinky. Not.
And a bunch of Cinema Crespo Diso stickers.
Don't sue us. You can take all that stuff home. That is all yours.
I mean it for the stickers.
Or you can take what Drusa Cogburn has in the box right over here.
What's in the box?
Oh, boy.
What's in the fucking box?
What are we going to do?
Oh, I picked the box last time, I think.
Oh, did you?
Ooh.
You know what's in the bag.
I know.
Who are you take what's in the box?
You know what? I think I like shiny. Appreciate it. But I think I'm going to go for the box again.
Go for the box again. Yeah. All right, here we go. Pop that top. Reach in there. Let the people know what we got.
Oh, I've got Man vs. Snake, the long and twisted tale of the Nibbler. From the Florida Film Festival.
That's a bottle of hot sauce.
It's a hot sauce. It's not just a game.
That's hot. That's not just hot sauce.
That came straight from the man himself.
That's Billy Mitchell hot sauce.
What?
King of Kong, Fistful of Quarters, Billy Mitchell himself.
So I can make buffalo wings and add.
Yes.
And
then he actually handed that to us from his hand.
Oh my gosh.
Us. And we had an extra bottle. So we figured we'd pass along the love, the Billy Mitchell hot sauce love.
Thank you. I've always wanted to try his wings, though.
Yeah. Oh, well, at least I get to know what it tastes like with the sauce on it.
Exactly. So for Clint.
And also make sure you get some stickers as well.
Yes.
Grab some stickers, Drew. All right, Jen, thank you so much.
Make it rain. Thank you so much.
We appreciate it.
This is awesome.
Drew, thank you, sir.
You're very welcome, sir.
And thank you everyone for downloading and listening. We appreciate it. Make sure to break up the big banks, read more books, be excellent to each other. And stay Orlando United and Orlando strong. Hugs for Orlando.
United.
We are out of here.
two, three.
Yeah, very good.
Drew. Check, check. 1, 2.
Let me fix that a second there.
Check, 3, 4.
Hold on a second.
Coming hot. Dude, hail Satan. Why'd you have to go to Satan? Because this is a space scene. I mean, listen, can you hear that? Sounds like Satan. Does it? Yes. If Satan existed, that would be his voice. It's just monster voice.
Satan.
It's just I'm CNN talking about how the pastor touched me, and I don't want anyone to know. That's the work of Satan. At least the pastor would tell you that.
Oh, okay.
That's very South Park Satan. I'm very hipster Satan for some reason.
It is. Ooh, hipster Satan. He's got to be the worst.
Yes.
I have too much fun with this thing. You really do. It's ridiculous.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah, and now we're all on helium.
Woo! Right?
Well, without... Welcome to the Chipmunks.
Without sucking on the helium. Because mm-hmm. you know the helium freezes your vocal cords.
And that's why, that's why you get that. Yeah.
That's why.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
Check 1, 2, check 1, 2. All right.